The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hi. Lovely to sit with you. So, I'd like to share some reflections this morning about metta, practice of metta and benefits of metta. So, and one thing that brought that to mind was something that Diana Clark and I have started to do. You might have seen it on the schedule, which, by the way, you should add to the announcements. It's on Wednesdays. It's the happy hour. Happy hour. We have started a happy hour at IMC. It's not what happy hour means outside, but bring your own metta is more like it. So it's an hour, it's actually recognized from 5:30 to 6:30. It's starting in June, it's going to be 6 to 7. We're going to experiment with slightly later time. But basically, it's an hour of practicing metta, loving kindness, and other Brahma Viharas. So Diana and I are alternating, and each week, one of us will be here. We'll do a guided meditation for about half an hour on loving kindness, one aspect of it, either for others, for yourself. You know, we're progressively working through the concentric circles that I will talk about today, and then we open it up to comments, questions. It's interactive. It's really sweet. It's been really sweet. So if that is a time that appeals to you, and the practice of metta, loving kindness appeals to you, as I will tell you today about the benefits of metta. Actually, I love giving talks because I remind myself of the benefits of practice. It's pretty awesome. So in that main, metta, loving kindness. So I'd like to actually have a show of hands first to get a sense of how many people have never heard of loving kindness practice, metta. What is this thing she's talking about? So I know. Right. Great, great. Raise your hands higher. Great. Terrific. Okay, fantastic. Thank you. And people who've heard about it but haven't really practiced it, kind of curious about it but don't know so much about it. A show of hands, please. Great. Sweet. Okay. And then people who have practiced metta, they love it. Yeah. Okay, sweet, great. And the rest, somewhere in the middle. Yeah, great. Okay, awesome. Great. Okay, sweet. So, what is this practice of metta, loving kindness? So the way I think about practices in Buddhism, there are the wisdom practices. The wisdom practices is vipassana, is insight, is mindfulness, which is what we tend to mainly do when we sit. There are also heart practices. Heart practices are metta, loving kindness, compassion, vicarious joy for joy of others, etc. Gratitude, forgiveness, those are the heart practices. And these two baskets of practices are really supportive of each other. And in fact, it is said that if you practice vipassana mindfulness without these heart practices, it's like riding a bicycle that is out of air, has no air. So it's a really, really bumpy ride. It's pretty rough, right? So these heart practices can be really supportive of the mindfulness practice, of the insight practice, of the vipassana practice. So what is the loving kindness metta practice? What is it as a formal practice? As a formal practice, it's a practice of cultivating goodwill. It's just simply that. It's cultivating a heart of goodwill, friendliness, openness. And it's not a practice that is forced or fabricated, but it's a cultivation. So the idea is that we all have goodwill, we all have friendliness, we all have care, concern. It's just natural. It's a part of our human condition to have that. And with this practice, we kind of stoke the fire, we encourage it, we incline the mind towards it so that it grows and grows and grows, so that in daily life, that becomes the inclination of our minds. It becomes the inclination of our heart. When something happens, our first response is one of, kindness, welcomeness, instead of fear or resentment or anger or anything else that could come up. Also, it's actually one thing I want to share is how this practice came about, because I mentioned fear. So it is said that the practice of metta first was taught by the Buddha as an antidote to fear. And according to legend, the Buddha sent a group of monks to meditate in the forest that was inhabited by tree spirits. And the tree spirits completely resented the monks' presence, didn't want the monks there, wanted to get rid of them. So they decided to scare them away. They were pretty crafty. And then what they did was the tree spirits transformed themselves, the legend says, into ghoulish visions, made terrible shrieking sounds, created awful smells. And the monks, they were terrified, and they fled the forest. And they came back to the Buddha and said, "Buddha, please, please send us anywhere else except this forest. It's terrifying there." And the Buddha said, "Okay, I'm going to send you back to the same forest. But this time, I'm going to give you the only protection you need." And that's when the Buddha gave the first teaching of metta to the monks. So the Buddha encouraged the monks to recite the phrases of metta for the tree spirits, for themselves and for the tree spirits, but most importantly to do it, not just recite them, but really to do it with a spirit of friendliness, with a spirit of kindness. So this story has a happy ending. The monks go back and they practice metta, and the tree spirits become so moved, apparently, by the energy of loving kindness that's generated, that they start to actually like the monks instead, and they start to serve them and protect them, and they live happily ever after, practicing in the forest. So whether it's the legend or not, but I think what is true about the story is that a mind that is filled with loving kindness and friendliness cannot be overcome by fear. And at the same time, if there is fear in the mind, loving kindness is an antidote. And in fact, loving kindness, metta, is an antidote also for hatred and ill will. And anger, also we teach it as an antidote to anger. So it's a really powerful practice. So as I mentioned, it's not a practice of fabricating. It's a practice of feeling what's already there, the goodwill that's already there, and increasing it and paying more attention to it. Because whatever you pay attention to becomes the inclination of your mind. It's basically tapping into a feeling of care, warmth, and goodwill, and expanding it. And the way this practice is done is through expanding, widening concentric circles. Traditionally, one usually starts with oneself, because in Asia, where the practice started, that tended to be easy for people. But in the West, we actually, sometimes it's hard to have kindness for ourselves. We feel like we don't deserve it, and all the things we've done wrong comes up. So what we do actually when we teach it here, we start with the second category, which is the kind of the easy category, your benefactor, your friend, your person that you have care for. And just easily when you think of them, a feeling of care comes up for you. When I teach it, I often suggest people think of a child or a pet. Just, you know, when you think of them, just there's an ease of, you know, a smile shows up, you see them running around, and, you know, the heart kind of opens. There's a friendliness. It's very simple. It's not complicated or sophisticated. Very simple. And then the circle self, and then benefactor, friend, and then we move to neutral person. As the practice continues to be developed, the heart continues to be opened, and then we can actually open this goodwill to people whom we don't really know, like someone who just we've seen at Starbucks, you know, who's made our coffee, and we just see them, or someone at the checkout counter, or somebody we see on the street. It's a neutral person we neither like or dislike. And then another concentric circle after that is people we have difficulty with. So we continue to extend our mind with people whom there's an edge, maybe somebody who's in our family or at work we're having complications with, so extending our heart of goodwill to them. And then the final category is all beings. So this gradual cultivation doesn't happen overnight, as you might have guessed. It happens very, very gradually. In fact, with the happy hour that Diana and I are teaching, we spend the first 4 weeks in the easy category, the first four sessions, just simple. And we're going to move for the next eight sessions for self, just really, you know, kindness, metta for ourselves. It's really, really taking our time. It's a gradual cultivation. So the way the practice is done is bringing, I usually describe it as a three-ring circus. So the three rings of the circus are, I'll just describe them to you, is one brings to mind the image of the being that you're feeling, that you're doing this practice for, say, in the easy category, the child, the pet, bring him to mind. And then, actually, I'm going to ask you to bring someone to mind right now. Just bring to mind somebody, someone, a child, someone who's just your friend. You care about them. Just bring him to mind. And see what happens in your body now. What happens in your mind and heart? What happens? Maybe just a little bit of something when you bring to mind their image, right? That shift, like, them. Maybe it's like that for you. Maybe something is like, Or maybe safety, whatever that is. That is metta, that friendliness. It's just that. So then in this practice, we have the first ring of the circus is being the object, the person we have in mind, the being we have in mind. The second ring becomes this subtle feeling that comes up, just kind of like, keeping that in view. And then the third ring are phrases, our traditional phrases. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be happy and have joy in your heart. May you be healthy and strong. And may you have ease in your life. So four phrases that have to do with safety, mental happiness, physical happiness, and ease, just general ease, well-being in life, ease in life. So the phrases then, they become kind of the thread that kind of keep it going. So this practice, sometimes when people do the practice of metta, you know, they want to experience the universal love right away, this amazing feeling of, and I'm not feeling it. I can't do this practice. I'm broken. Guess what? It doesn't happen that way. There might be feelings of emotions coming up. Maybe not, nothing at all. You may not feel anything. In fact, you might just be feeling like you're saying the phrases and they're pretty dry, and that's okay. It's planting seeds. Every phrase, every moment of inclining your minds towards friendliness, towards goodwill, towards other people and yourself is planting the seed. And I love this story by Sharon Salzberg, who really was the person who brought this teaching to the U.S. from the East. And this is probably the most often told story that Sharon tells, and it's in her book, Loving Kindness, and when I taught with her last year at IMS, she told the story again. So she said that she wanted to try this practice, and so she did a self-retreat. Other people were doing Vipassana practice, but during that 7-day retreat, she decided to do metta practice. And so she did metta practice, she did the phrases, she did it for a whole week, and just nothing was happening. She didn't feel a thing. Nothing was happening. And at the end of it, she thought, this was a whole week wasted, and also the whole endeavor, she says, felt excruciatingly boring to her to just say this phrase, like, may you be happy, may you be well. And then she said that today she left, she drops a vase on the floor, and the vase breaks and scatters, and what comes up in her mind is, Sharon, you're you're such a klutz, and I love you anyway. And she gets startled. Where did that come from? And I love you anyway. That would not have been her reaction a week prior, a month prior. So, and she realized, wow, that whole excruciatingly boring week of nothing happening, actually something profound did happen. Something profound shifted in her. So I love that story because I know that I've practiced metta for a long time. I dedicated actually a year of my practice to heart practices. And I also, during a one-month-long retreat, I did metta and other Brahma-vihara, other heart practices during that month. And there were times that, yes, there were, you know, my heart was glowing and I was feeling, and there were times I was just like saying the phrases, yeah, may you be happy, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be well, may you be safe. And just trusting that something is shifting by lending our heart, by putting ourselves in that field of kindness, by inclining our minds and not expecting results. And with metta, I'm going to talk in a moment about the benefits of metta, both the conventional benefits. There are a bunch of studies I'd like to share with you. Actually, it's very interesting talking about the benefits of loving-kindness meditation. But really, it's when we think of the benefits, when we think of practicing metta, I invite you not to have so much expectation but aspiration. And those two things are very different. So expectation is ego satisfaction. Your ego wants a certain satisfaction. Oh, I want this to happen for me. Whereas, and the same thing actually, it's not just with metta practice, but with any practice, with vipassana, with mindfulness, like expecting something to happen, expecting your mind to get concentrated, to get into absorption, expecting to have insights, expecting to be enlightened. It's all ego satisfaction. Your ego wants something versus aspiration, being feeling aspired to practice. And the word aspiration comes from French aspirare or Latin aspirare, which is related to breathing, breath, which is relating to breath. And it's an earnest desire for something above one. So it's an earnest desire to be lifted up. So that desire, so I invite you to have that desire, that intention, wholesome intention to be lifted up into something higher instead of that expectation. Do you see the difference? It's kind of the expectation has just, ouch, some kind of like wanting, that tightness about it. Whereas aspiration is, it uplifts your heart to a higher destination. So with that, actually, first I'd like to share with you the 11 benefits of practicing metta from Anguttara Nikaya, from the words of the Buddha. And then I'll share with you the scientific studies. So ready for the 11? It's a good list. So number one, you will sleep easily. And that is actually true. I can attest to that. You will sleep easily. It's just doing metta and loving kindness before going to bed, or actually in bed, when you're lying in bed. Yes, great. Other people are nodding in agreement. You've tried it. It's amazing. You sleep better. You really do. Number two, you will wake up easily. You will wake up easily. Because if you sleep easily and you sleep well, then you wake up easily. Number three, you will have pleasant dreams. And that's a nice one too, because of course your mind, your heart has been inclined towards a happier destination. That's why we call it happy hour. It kind of makes you happy. It really does. It makes you happier. People will love you. That kind of makes sense too, right? Because if you're happier, if you're less grumpy, right, people will like you more. And actually, yeah. This next one is interesting. Devas, which is celestial beings and angels and animals, will love you. This one I don't know, but I have a pretty good relationship with animals, I think. So I don't know. You should try it on yourself. Don't take my word for it. And then Deva, celestial beings will protect you. This one, again, I can't attest to. I don't know, but it sounds like a really good benefit. This next one I'm not so sure about, so I'll share it. But number 7, external dangers such as poisons, weapons, and fire will not harm you. I wouldn't recommend trying this at home. I don't know. I haven't tried it, but I don't know. But this next one, I think this one, I think is a good one. Number 8, your face will be radiant. Yeah, I think so too. This 9th one, actually this one completely I agree with. Your mind will be serene. Your mind will be serene. Will be in a happier destination. By the way, that one reason why this heart practices, the 4 of them are called Brahma Viharas, the dwellings, heavenly dwellings. It's really, it feels like you're in the heavenly realm. And what is it like to be in the heavenly realm? Ah, the mind is serene, the mind is happy. That's where the mind resides, in the heavenly realm, in the happy realm. Brahma Viharas, Brahma, heavenly Vihara dwelling. Number 10, this one I don't know either yet. You will die unconfused. It's a good one though. And number 11, you will be reborn in happy realms. It's a nice one too. And also, if you think of rebirth, not just from one life, one full life to the next full life, but if you think of it being reborn from this moment to the next, which is another way some scholars interpret rebirth, if your mind is inclined to kindness in this moment, well, you will be reborn in a happier place in the next moment, right? Because one moment conditions, preconditions the next. So yes, you will be reborn in happy realms in the next moment of your life. So, okay, now I'd like to share with you some of the scientific studies. So there's some effects in increasing positive emotions, which is basically you'll be happier, your mind will be serene, and decreasing negative emotions. And this was a seminal study that was done by Barbara Friedrichsen, and she and her colleagues took subjects in a 7 weeks of loving kindness meditation. So they did 7 weeks of meditation, and then by the end of that, measurably, statistically, in a statistically significant way, there was increased love, feelings of joy, contentment, gratitude, hope, interest, amusement, and awe. These are all pretty good, right? Just 7 weeks? It seems pretty short. And then these positive emotions led to increase in personal resources, increase in purpose in life, in social support, decrease in illness symptoms, which then in turn increase life satisfaction, which is perceived quality of life, and reduce depressive symptoms. In another study, there's a 6 weeks of compassion cultivation, and the effect they measured was on stress and immune response. So they had a stress test at the end, and statistically, again, significantly, the effect of stress. How many people have stress in their lives? I know, of course. So. The effect of stress, as they measured blood cortisol level, and both blood cortisol level as well as in the saliva they tested it, there was much more resilience to stress for those subjects who had gone through a 6-week compassion cultivation training compared to the control subjects who had not had that. If I told you there was a pill that made you more immune to stress, you would take it. Right? So this is the practice that makes you more immune to stress. It's pretty awesome. It's right here. There are also some studies about physiological changes. In one study by Lutz and others, Lee and Lung, there are many of them, the brain related areas to emotion regulation increased. So there was increase in gray matter volume in the brain. And there was a telomere. Oh, this is a fun one. Okay, this experiment was just done with women. So with women who went through a loving kindness, it doesn't say how many weeks here, but at the end of the loving kindness training, they compared their telomere length, which is a biological marker for aging, and the women with the loving kindness experience had longer telomere length compared to age match controls. So forget about the beauty creams. Those masks and all, loving kindness practice every morning. Also, their measured effects of social connection, this is an interesting one. Actually, loving kindness practice, even in a short session, in a tiny dose of 10 minutes, increased feelings of social connection to others. And 10 minutes, that's pretty short. Come to happy hour. It's pretty short. Loving kindness practice makes you nicer, makes you more helpful. Again, there was another study that they did in the lab. I won't go in through the details, but people who went through, they were primed with loving kindness, their pro-social and helping behavior increased in the lab. They essentially became nicer people. They were willing to help, you know, a compatriot whose computer was broken and it was all a setup, but they were much more willing to do that than the people who didn't go through the loving kindness. So if you want to become nice. Another, I think a very important one. Loving kindness practice, there's a study where 6 weeks of it was shown to decrease implicit, this is not explicit bias, but implicit bias, bias that you don't know you have towards social outgroups, which is really significant because it is shown that a lot of times we have implicit bias that we don't even know about to people who are not like us in different ways in terms of race, color, class, education, country of birth, you name it. We don't even know. And this actually decreased, 6 weeks of loving kindness decreased implicit bias, which is really powerful, right? Things that we don't even know we have, like way down in our psyche. It reduced self-criticism, and this is actually a great one. So self-criticism is related to depressive symptoms. You know, when you have a strong judgmental mind, when you have a strong inner critic, which always tells you, oh, you shouldn't have done this, you should do this, you should do that. Guess what happens? After a while, one gets depressed. Depressive symptoms arise. They are linked in psychological sciences. And loving kindness reduces self-criticism, kind of calms that judgmental mind that just comes up all the time, even when there is no need for it, and hence it reduced depressive symptoms and improved self-compassion and positive emotions. And in this particular study by Shahar et al., 2014, the results were maintained 3 months afterwards also, which again is maintaining those is significant. There's also benefits in pain management. In one study, it decreased migraine headaches. In another study, it decreased the experience of chronic pain for patients with chronic lower back pain. And it did two things. Both it reduced the perception of pain, but even more importantly, it decreased the pain and the anger and the psychological distress that's associated with having pain, right? Because when we have pain, when we have chronic pain, there are two things we're dealing with. One is like, oh, this pain again, is it ever going to go away? It's like my life has changed. Oh, it's that anger, that mental anguish. And then there is the pain itself. So the loving kindness helped with both. So The Dalai Lama says, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. And if you want to be happy yourself, practice compassion. Basically, it's the path to happiness. And all these studies that I talked about, like, these are different aspects. I mean, scientists are trying to measure the different aspects of happiness and well-being, right? So the path to happiness, practice loving kindness. So these were some conventional ways, some conventional benefits of metta, right? You know, good health, happiness, social connection. But of course, you know, in our practice, in our spiritual path, conventional goodies are fantastic. And we do this practice for a higher reason, for an aspiration to be more aligned with our highest intention as a human being. Who do we want to be in this world? How do we want to be remembered? How do we want to affect other people's lives? Who do we want to be in this one precious life that we have? Jack Kornfield puts it well in his book, A Path with Heart. I'd like to share this paragraph with you. He says, in the stress and complexity of our lives, we may forget our deepest intention. But when people come to the end of their life and look back, the question that they most often ask are not usually, how much is in my bank account, or how many books did I write, or what did I build, or the like. If you have the privilege of being with a person who's aware at the time of his or her death, you find the questions such a person asks are very simple. Did I love well? Did I live fully? Did I learn to let go? So the question, did I love well? It really comes down to that. Did I love well? Do we love well? Are we inclining our minds to love ourselves, to love others around you? How can we open our hearts to our fuller potential as our human beings to love, to accept? And it's up to us. Nobody else is going to do it for us. There's no magic pill. It's really up to us. There's a poem by Rumi, and Coleman Barks translates it in this way. He says, stretch your arms and take hold of the cloth of your clothes with your hands. The cure for pain is in the pain. I'll read it one more time. Stretch your arms and take hold of the cloth of your clothes with your own hands. The cure for pain is in the pain. So I love this because it's about developing compassion. In our own suffering, for example, that becomes the grist for the mill of compassion for our hearts to open up. For our hearts to really open to our own suffering and the suffering of others. Though, with all due respect, Coleman Barks missed some really interesting nuances in this poem. So I'm going to read it in Farsi and translate it for you because I think it's for our practice. I think there's a lot in here. So in Farsi it goes, Dast bokshah daman khod ra begir, marham in rish, juz in rish nist. So the first part, Dast bokshah, yes, stretch your hand. But the nuance here is stretching your hand, stretching your arm. In Farsi, when you say Dast bokshah, it's in this way, the way it's said, it's usually you stretch your arm for help to another person, right? But then he says, stretch your arms and take hold of your own robe, of your own cloth. So instead of stretching your hand to ask for mercy, for help, for compassion from someone else, stretch your hand and then, woo, grab your own cloth. Oh, that's interesting. But now what does he mean by that? So you're getting your own cloth. But the nuance here is, in Farsi, grabbing someone's cloth is asking them for mercy and compassion. And it's a saying, and it's an expression. You never grab your own cloth. It's just kind of, there's no expression. So he's turning that around its head. You stretch your arms and you grab your own cloth. So you ask, you tap into your own compassion. Does that make sense? It's a beautiful way of working with a metaphor. So stretch your arms and grab your own cloth of mercy, generosity, kindness, compassion, your own robe. And then the second part that Coleman Barks translated, the cure for the pain in this pain, is in the pain, is actually more nuanced too. So what he says is marham in rish. Marham is the word for curing salve. It's like the curing salve for this wound. The word rish appears twice in the second part. The curing salve for this wound. The first rish means wound. The second, and then he says, so the curing salve of this rish is this rish. What does that mean? Well, the first rish means the wound. The second one could mean wound, but actually has a second meaning. In Arabic, rish means an embroidered garment. So the cure for this, for the curing salve for this pain is in your own embroidered garment, is in your own compassion. So it's up to us. It's up to us. The cure for this wound, for this suffering, for the pain, is in our own compassion, our own embroidered garment. I hope that made sense. Yeah. Ian McFarlane is said to say, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle." And actually, it's said that Thomas Merton, the well-known Christian mystic, he said, it's a variant of this, "Be kind to everyone you meet, for each has been asked to carry a great burden." And it is true. I mean, we don't know what burdens people carry, all of us. No life is without difficulty or burden. No life. None of us are immune to it. It's just the human condition. It's the human condition. And all of us sitting in this room, we may not know each other's stories. We don't know each other's stories. But I can be sure that every single one of us has known sorrow. Every single one of us has known sorrow and pain in some way. It's the human condition. It's what binds us in a way. And by cultivating our hearts to compassion, to kindness, to metta, we can be the one to be of service, to provide that care, the love, the stability when it's needed. There's a beautiful quote I want to share with you from Thich Nhat Hanh, from his book Peaceful Action, Open Heart. He says, "Imagine a boatload of refugees caught in a storm at sea. If everyone panics, they will jump up and move around hurriedly and fearfully, further destabilizing the boat and perhaps causing it to capsize. But if there is just one person who remains calm, who is with his equanimity, his or her equanimity can say, 'Dear friends, stay where you are and sit quietly,' that person can save the whole group. Though he or she doesn't do anything but stay calm and help others regain their calmness, in this way the catastrophe is averted. This is skillful non-action, the quality of being that is the ground for all good action." So maybe it's up to us. Maybe you will be the only one on the boat who has stability and loving kindness. Why rely on others? Why rely on others? It's up to us. Nobody's going to do it for us to incline our hearts. And also, with the events in our world and our country, it's, and around the world, really, it's good to keep in mind the teaching from the Buddha that hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone. And this is an ancient eternal law. And how is love cultivated? How is love cultivated? By inclining our mind towards it. By inclining our minds steadily, patiently, every moment, day by day. Practicing metta, either formally or informally. Informally. If you're driving your car, driving around, practice metta for drivers on the road. See how you feel by the time you arrive. If you're on public transport, do the same. See how you feel. You can do it informally. Incline your mind towards friendliness. So with that, I'd like to end with one last poem from Hafez. And this is, by the way, the most famous poem of Hafez in Farsi. It goes, بیا تا گل برافشانیم و می در ساغر اندازیم. فلک را سقف بشکافیم و طرحی نو در اندازیم. Translation roughly is, this one is more straightforward. Come, let's spread flower petals and fill cups with red wine. So there's a celebratory aspect to it. Come, let's spread flower petals and fill cups with red wine. Unlace the roof of the sky and fashion a new world. Unlace the roof of the sky and fashion a new world. We can fashion a new world in loving kindness, in metta. Dalai Lama says, love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive. Thank you.